Hello and welcome to Choose Up Phi. Today on the show, we have another update from one of our Households of Phi member, which I'm really excited to welcome Vivian back to the podcast. So for those of you that remember, Vivian is a pharmacist from Texas. She has a now four-year-old daughter, who at the time we met her, incredibly, was a one-year-old daughter. Vivian has gotten out of $300,000 of debt, and she's faced some challenges, just like we all have. And I think that's what's so wonderful about these stories is we all can see each other in these stories, right? I'm not alone in my journey because Vivian's going through this, because somebody else, you can learn from somebody else, from another Households of Phi member, or from my story. That's the beauty of being part of a community. And Vivian has bravely fought breast cancer, and she's in remission now, which is wonderful. And she had a child custody battle. So while she makes a nice income as a pharmacist, she has certainly dealt with her share of issues. And this is real life. So with that, welcome to Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Vivian, welcome back to Choose of I. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate coming back here.
Yeah, it's so great. It's been about 18 months since we last chatted with you. So for people who are looking to catch up on your story, which we're certainly going to give an overview here, but you were originally introduced in episode 221, and then you had an episode with Leslie Tain in episode 255, and that was talking about being a single parent. And you said, one of the most beautiful quotes I've ever heard is, quote, "It's hard, but I'm not giving up." And that was one of those chill-inducing moments for me, because it is hard. Yeah. Life is hard. And obviously, you've had some issues and struggles, but I'm not giving up. And that was so inspiring to me, Vivian.
Yes, I remember saying that. At that time, I have a lot of fire in me. But after the COVID hit, I feel like, I don't know what, just right now, I feel like I'm in a midlife crisis. I'm not even sure what that is, but it just feels like that. There are moments that you want to give up, but I have to say that I'm lucky to have my sister to push me not to give up. Sometimes you just have to constantly remind yourself that you can't give up because you have a responsibility and you have your daughter that you want to make sure that, you know, she's doing okay. And if you're not doing okay, then she won't be doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. And so your sister is there to push you?
Yes. She's going through what I'm going through with a custody battle. She's in the same situation, but her situation is actually, I wouldn't say worse than mine, because financially she's not stable. So I have to, what we're doing, we're pushing each other up. She's helping me with more of the, I'm not very good with words. So she's helping me more with the handling with the parent facilitator and a difficult parent, because she also going through the same thing with a difficult co-parenting, but she's in it longer, so she know how to handle things. And then I help her with her finance, because right now she's also a single mom with three kids and try to go for a PA school physician assistant. So I'm just helping her with that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a team, it sounds like. That's for sure. And it's amazing. And we talked about this before. I actually, I don't want to steal your words without attribution. When I said in the intro, "I'm not alone," that again was just another beautiful quote from you. And I think you said, and this is the beauty of having a community, right? Is you saw a post in a Facebook group,
right?
And it emboldened you, maybe even to come back here on the podcast.
Yes. So, you know, when you ask me to come back, I'm just kind of debating because I have so much going on. Should I do this? I mean, obviously, it's very hard to put yourself out there. So I was wondering if I should go back on Phi and you know, share my story. And I just feel like kind of like a failure because I feel like I'm not far enough where I want to be, even though it's not true. But that's my thought at that moment. So the second email reply to you, like, you know, I don't think I can do this. But after what you told me, you know, life happened, thing happened, and then get me to think over. And then I saw a Facebook post on a woman finance group, on a Facebook group. And there's a woman that who also a single mom going through the same thing as I am, custody battle with a difficult co-parenting. You know, she feels like she's having finance trouble because, you know, you have to deal with when you're in a custody battle, for example, in my situation, you have to deal with paying with a lawyer, which is expensive. And then if you have a difficult parent, they also want to get a psychiatrist evaluation on you. You have to pay for that. And then you also have to pay for a parent facilitator because, you know, they try to get you to cooperate. So all those things cost money. And I can feel that woman that on the post, she was mentioning how she's going through a hard time because the other parent giving her a hard time and draining all her finance because she has to go through all that. So it just kind of made me realize that I'm not alone and there's a lot of people out there that are like that. So I want to make sure that I share my story, that we can get through this together. And it just kind of gave me a light that I'm pretty blessed to be able to pay for all those lawyer and those custody battle that require and then also max out all my retirement accounts.
Yeah. And I mean, I think one of the most important things, sure, you are blessed. And like you said, you have a higher income and you can pay for these, but it doesn't take away from the fact that this is still difficult for you, right? Like, and I think it's important for us to all understand, like, it's okay to not be okay sometimes, right? And it's just so wonderful that you decided to come back on the show. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And I mean, we're all struggling in our own way, especially the last couple of years. I mean, this COVID world has not been easy for any of us. And I think it's high time that we all just really say, hey, sometimes I'm just not okay, even mentally or whatever, or I'm dealing with anxiety or whatever it is. And nobody's life is unicorns and rainbows every single day. It's just not the way it works. But like you said, I'm not alone and you can provide support. People can provide support for you, from your sister to this person you'd never met on the Facebook group.
Yes, I agree. After reading that, it just kind of pushed me that, you know, there's a lot of people out there and I want to make sure that they hear my story and that if I'm pushing it through and try to get you fight, and I'm sure on the finance group and they all have the same goal too. So I want to make sure that I made it so they can see that they can do it too.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think another aspect of this is expectations. Right. Yeah. Like I think so many of us, and like how we view the world is often based on our expectations of a situation. Like you wrote to me, and if you don't mind, I'm gonna read just a little bit of that email that you referred to, which was, so the first email, I think I would be interested in Households of Phi because I need someone to hold me accountable. And you said, since we stopped doing it, I have not been consistent in saving. The only thing I have done is max out my 401k and IRA and do the mega Roth conversion, but I haven't saved anything extra. The most I save is probably 20% of my income. I would like to get back on track. And then we emailed again and you wrote back saying, I don't think I want to continue because I don't think I can be FI in 10 years, probably only 20 if I'm consistent. And I think this is such an amazing example of those expectations. I mean, Vivian, you are rocking it. Like, I mean, in terms of finance, like, I know you're hard on yourself, but you are rocking it. You maxed out your 401k and your IRA. And in all likelihood, in a worst case scenario, you're going to get to FI in 20 years. Think about those words and think about how amazing that is.
Yeah, I can see that. But it's just when you're a single mom and you can't harm yourself because you want to have that more free time with your child before she become 18 and move out of the house. That's why I was so hard on myself. And, you know, right now it's just so much going on with inflation also after the COVID and the war. My car just died on the middle of the highway and you just want to go buy the car, but everything is just so expensive. It just feels like financially everything just crashing down on you. So that's why I was so hard on myself. But you know, think after what you just told me, it's just kind of opened my eye. Yeah, it is I mean, a lot of people cannot max out their Roth IRA or doing a mega Roth right now. So it just made me realize how blessed I am.
Yeah. And you're doing great. But again, it's okay to not feel great also, right? Yeah. Like that's okay. And the reason why I'm kind of reiterating this is I want our community to understand that. I really do. Because you can be on a right path and you can still have like, again, people think like my problems aren't that bad, or that old saying like, oh, the first world problems, which I hate. It's just like it minimizes what we're going through. And I think it's needless. I think it just makes us feel bad about ourselves needlessly. And you said in there, it feels like the world is kind of crashing down on me sometimes, especially when your car stops on the highway. Like, and it can feel like that, and you can still be doing objectively great. You know, so it's this weird dichotomy of doing objectively really well, but it's still not feeling great.
Yes, I agree. Definitely agree with you. I'm sure to somebody else, I am doing great, but internally, I feel like I have a midlife crisis. That's how I feel like. It's just, it's a lot going on. You know, right now with my car going, you know, just die. And now I have to think like, oh, great. I have to have $30,000 for the car. To be honest with you, I've been doing great, maxing out everything, but I depleted my emergency fund because I had to pay for the lawyer and the parent facilitator and the psychiatrist. Right now, my ex, which is the co-parent, he wants to put my child in daycare, which is kind of useless because my mom is capable of taking care of her until she goes to kindergarten. And she's also a preschool teacher for 17 years. But you know, since the parent being so difficult because he doesn't want my daughter to be around my family. So he just wanted to take her to daycare, and that's court order. And that's also another cost because daycare is not cheap. So I just feel like nothing go my way. And then, of course, my car died. My sister is going through the same thing. Custody battle with a difficult parent also. And right now she's a single mom of three. So sometimes I lend her money to help pay for her lawyer. And then she also going through school. So I had to help lend her money to pay for school. When you lend family money, you have to think that that's money gone. So I don't want to be negative, but that's, you know, you have to think like that. That's just, you're giving it, you know, for your heart. Because especially when somebody else going through a hard time financially, you might not see your money again, or it got to take a long time to get back. So that's another thing. Car breakdown, sister going through hard time. And then, you know, I had to take care of my two, my parent, my mom and my dad, make sure. And they are growing older. They're still healthy, but, you know, they live with me. So it's like the sandwich generation. So it's just, I feel like everything is just kind of crashing down because it's a lot to handle. But yeah, financially, it looked great. But internally, it's a lot going on.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. And you did mention just in passing the sandwich generation. I did want to mention you were on another episode 302 with Tay from the Financial Tortoise. And you both were talking about questions and issues around having basically three generations, or certainly having your parents live with you. So that's what the sandwich generation kind of alludes to there. But obviously, we can talk about like individual like strategies. So like the car breaking down. I mean, I think a lot of how we talk in the financial independence community is in very broad strokes accurate, but that doesn't mean it's perfect for every person's situation. So for instance, you know, you just said, now I have to get $30,000 to pay for a new car or a car, whatever it is. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world to have car payments, right? I know we talk about, oh, you should never have car payments. Or I mean, these are the ridiculous caricatures, or you should always buy a used car or whatever. Like having car payments is the worst. Well, it's not the worst for everybody, right? It's very situational. If you're talking about, okay, based on your situation here, where obviously you've had a significant amount of expenses, and like you said, you depleted your emergency fund. Well, maybe finding $30,000 is not going to be the easiest thing in the world, right? And what might that mean? Are you going to take it out of a 401k or do something like that just because again, and this is a caricature, so bear with me, Vivian, but like, because the financial independence community says I can't have car payments. So like, no, that would be a terrible decision in my opinion. So having a car payment, even at whatever it is, 4, 5, 6% interest, I mean, that's okay. You have to sometimes cut yourself some slack that life happens and you have to be okay with that.
Yeah. And that's what going through my head, like, oh my God, it's a car payment. I can't do that. I need to pay upfront. Because that's what the bike community thought is, you need to buy a used car. Unfortunately, used car right now, I go to all the dealership, it's more expensive than a new car. Like, it doesn't make sense. And then, you know, with the chip issue, and, you know, if you buy a car, you're going to have to wait a few months, which is fine. My car is still running. I actually have a Hyundai. The engine died because there's a recall on the engine. So it just died in the middle of the highway. So luckily, they say they put in a new engine for me, for my car. So it's still run pretty good. But occasionally, the engine light will still come on. So in my head, like, yeah, I might need a new car. I want to push it until it die, you know, until the end. But it's, I was thinking I might need a new car. So I was thinking, oh, I have to pay upfront. That's when I get the anxiety, because I feel like I can't have any more debts because I just pay off that $300,000 debt. So I don't want that no debt behind my back. So I need to pay everything upfront. But I realized that, you know, that's not possible at one time, you know. So I might have to take out a loan, just put some down payment and take it out a loan, save for a car payment for a few months. That way I wouldn't do. I would not touch my 401k or Roth IRA.
Yeah. And that, and you know, you've confirmed my fears on some level, but also I think, again, it's just very important to say, like, there are no rules in FI. Like, everybody's life is different. And especially what I talk about here on a podcast in front of so many people, like, I can't talk to every situation. You can't talk to every, we can't, it's just not the way it works. Like, we can only talk about our own lives. And we have to understand that sometimes life means you need to make a choice that's not the perfect one that you would do if you had $20 million in the bank or something ridiculous like that, right? So, like, it's okay to take out a loan because, I mean, Vivian, you're not in the spot anymore where you have $300,000 of debt, or you're not somebody at this point who is going to get in credit card debt, or in my opinion, or based on what I know of you, there's no danger of that happening. So it's not like, you know, they talk about like the slippery slope of what could happen. Like, you taking out a car payment, if you absolutely have to, I mean, you're going to pay that off in a reasonable manner. And that's understandable debt, in my opinion. Now, totally separate issue, obviously, what it sounds like, and I wonder if you should ask, is like, you just had a car that died on you because of an issue of the car manufacturer. I suspect you might get some compensation in terms of like a rental car, or maybe the dealership has to give you a loaner car or something. Have you looked into that?
The car's already fixed and the engine's already put in. So they did give me a rental car. I don't have to pay for it. They give me a loaner first. And because, you know, car shortage, there's no rental. So they give me a loaner first. So after they find a rental that have a car open, so they pay for everything. So that's good. Nothing out of pocket. Yeah.
Okay. But you're saying the engine light, the check engine light still comes on after they just put a new engine in?
Mm-hmm. So I might have to go back this Wednesday and get a checkup again. Not sure what's going on. It might be a computer issue. That's what I'm hoping for. But they say they did put in a new engine. So we'll see how it goes.
Wow. Okay. So, right. I mean, obviously, we're not going to spend 10 minutes talking about your exact car situation. But I think it's important that, like, another kind of theme that has come out of Choose FI and the FI community is everything is negotiable. But that's kind of where I was going in terms of really demanding what you're owed. And I don't mean demanding in like a jerk kind of way. But again, if they gave you an issue, if their car died on you, obviously, then I would demand a rental car. Like, it sounds like you got one, which is great. But I mean, they need to fix this thing. So, like, it doesn't to me sound like, and again, I don't know the specifics, but I would keep bringing it back until that thing is fixed and you feel comfortable with it, because they gave you a faulty car and they need to fix this thing. And it doesn't matter if you look like the person who's showing up every 5 days and you're complaining. Like, you have a right to complain, and you have a right to not have to spend $30,000 to buy a new car because their car died on you. That's how I would look at it. And Vivian, I don't think I always would have done, like, I was always kind of like the meek, like I never wanted to ask for things or seem like the annoying customer. But I think that's one thing that's like the FI community has really emboldened me to, you have to ask for what you deserve. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I'm the same way. I'm usually the person who doesn't like to bother anybody or ask for things. But if you don't voice your opinion, you're never going to get what you want. And people got to step all over on you. So you definitely have to ask. If you don't ask, you'll regret it. If they tell you no, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen to you? You know, just do what you can until the end so you have no regret, even though you don't get the result.
Yeah, I like that. And yeah, I mean, when you're within your rights and when you're in the right, you should stick up for yourself and stand up for yourself. And I think that's beautiful and it's really important. And the word you used was much better than what I used, which was, I don't feel like I want to bother people. I use the word meek, and that probably isn't exactly how I'd characterize. But yeah, it was always like, oh, I don't want to bother anybody. And like, I just think that's a silly way to go through life when, you know, again, like you said, you don't want people stepping all over you. So, I mean, that's a really important kind of larger theme that I'm really glad we touched on. I listen to a lot of podcasts. The Tim Ferriss Show has always been my favorite by far, but for the first time ever, there's a real rival for that top spot. It's a show called My First Million. When I see a new episode show up in my podcast player, it's a drop everything and listen kind of situation for me. The show is all about business building and growth hacking, from how to make $1,000 in a weekend type side hustles to billion-dollar ideas and everything in between. The show is fun, it's infectious. The hosts, Sam Parr and Sean Perry, have an amazing rapport. In fact, if you're a longtime Choose a Vibe fan, I think you'll find it's the closest thing to me and Jonathan you've ever heard. And Sam and Sean are legit. They've built and sold eight-figure businesses to HubSpot and Amazon, and they have an amazing network of friends and colleagues they get on the show to share their wisdom. If I lost everything and had to start over from scratch, I can honestly say the first place I'd start is with My First Million. I think the mindset of business building they cultivate is unmatched, so I'd seriously just listen to every episode in their feed and go from there. The show is a little bit of an acquired taste, but as you get to know Sam and Sean, you'll see just how brilliant they are. So take my word for it and listen to at least a handful of episodes. I think you'll love it. So search for My First Million. That's My First Million on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I wanted to just talk real quickly about, you know, another kind of sacred cow, if you will, of the FI community, which I say kind of jokingly here, is the maxing out of accounts. So the maxing out of the 401k and the IRA. And I certainly think, and I've always thought, that there is a lot of amazing good that can come out of doing that, out of maxing out those accounts. Obviously, it's just like we all know, especially for you who has a nice income as a pharmacist, it gets you a tax deduction at your highest marginal rate because that comes off right off the top of your income. So there's a nice amount of benefit. I imagine it's probably 22% plus, well, I guess you're in Texas, you don't have a state income tax, but for most people, it would be somewhere in that vicinity plus another 5-7% or thereabouts. So it's a nice tax savings, but and we actually have a guest coming on in a couple of weeks named Nick Majuli, and he talked about this in his book, basically saying how there's almost like an opportunity cost. So it's basically, what are you giving up? Like all the other things you're giving up by maxing out the 401k. And I guess where I'm coming to with you is, and I think this is pretty universal advice for just about everybody, is we should always get our 401k match if your company has one, because that is truly free money. And that is like so important to do. But then above that, and again, this is not saying that 401ks are bad by any means. It's just, then it becomes situational. Like in your case, you said that you depleted your emergency fund, right? So I think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this. I suspect, again, based on these tenets of FI, like you didn't want to get a car loan because car loans are anti-FI, or I don't want to stop maxing my 401k because that's what the FI community does. But I mean, sometimes having that emergency fund, especially in your case, where you have these significant expenses and things keep on popping up, like having money lying around in your savings or checking account is vastly more beneficial to your life now than maxing out that 401k and not being able to touch that money. So again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but has that thought crossed your mind, or talk me through that whole situation?
Yes, that thought crossed my mind all the time. So you kind of hit the point there. I've been thinking about, should I just stop maxing out? And I don't know, it's just kind of, I'm not sure. I think maybe it's just the feeling, it just feel really good that you can just max it out. By the way, it's already maxed out on June. So everything's maxed
out. For 2022.
Yes.
Nice.
It just feel good. It feel like, how you say it, it just feel like a checklist that you need to do the year. Like, I need to max out the Roth IRA going through backdoor. I need to max out the 401k. And then now that my job offer a megawatt, I'm like, I'm going to take advantage of this. I'm going to max that out too. So that's what I've been doing. It just feel good when you're able to do that. I don't know how to explain to you, Brad. I don't know why, but it just feel good to max out. Feel like you accomplished something. That's why I did it. But even though, you know, I didn't save anything for emergency fund, it just feel like you accomplished something. It's just weird, but
yeah. No, it's not weird. I mean, you did accomplish something. You accomplished something amazing and you should be really proud of yourself. I mean, without any question. And I don't want you to get the impression that I'm saying it's a bad thing. It's an amazing thing. I mean, truly amazing. I think there might be a case, depending on your exact situation. And I don't know when you say emergency fund, if that means that's like all of your, as we call it, kind of like after tax money or your taxable savings, right? So you have your retirement buckets, your 401k, your Roth IRA, all those things. And then we have our regular investments, you know, what you would have, whether it's in your savings account, your checking account, in Vanguard, Fidelity, wherever it may be. But that's all kind of the money that you have to play with that's not tied up in retirement accounts. So do you have, so you had your emergency fund. Do you have investments also that are kind of that taxable savings?
Yeah, I have a brokerage account with Vanguard and I put $200 in a month. It's just automatic, so yeah. You know, I don't look at it. So it's just $200 a month. But you know, right now, I originally want to put $750 a week. But since now going through with all these hardship, I can't do that. I might have to start saving for emergency fund again. So that's what I'm doing. So I stopped contribute to it. Actually, I haven't contributed. I think I only contribute $6,000. That's it, to the brokerage account. That's it. Because I realized that I need all these extra money for expenses and start saving that emergency fund again and for a call.
Yeah. And again, I think you're very hard on yourself. And then I only save $6,000, right? Like that's an incredible amount of money when you're also talking about maxing out all these accounts. So just please remember, don't be hard on yourself. You're doing really amazingly well. And I think it also, that does extend. And again, I'm not here to give you financial advice or the audience. That's not how it works. It's just, you know, we're just talking through something. And like, I just want to say, and this probably sounds weird coming from me, but like, again, with that maxing out the 401k, I think you need to just look at your life and your stress level and just say, hey, for a short period of time, would my stress level be significantly reduced if I could refill that emergency fund? And what it might mean, Vivian, honestly, is just, hey, for 2022, you maxed out your 401k the first half of the year. What it might mean is then for 2023, you max it out the second half of the year, because I suspect knowing you, you'll replenish your emergency fund, you know, in these last couple months of 2022, the first couple months of 2023, you'll replenish it. Your stress level will be reduced because you'll have this money there sitting as an emergency fund. And then you'll go back and max out your 401k at the end of 2023. And if you can't, you don't beat yourself up. You get the match and you do as best as you can. But that might be just something to consider, I would say. It's just like, think about your own situation and your own life and your own stress level, and not these ridiculous fictional rules that we like to think exist in the financial independence community, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I first started the fight, I don't know how people see it, it's how I see it. It's just a straight line going up. But it doesn't work like that. It's just, you're not going to go on a straight line path. You're going to go up and down, up and down. So I realized that, you know, it's not that easy. But, you know, you try to be as much consistent as possible. That way you can still kind of, even though you go up and down, there's still kind of straight line still can going up. I don't know if I can draw a graph for you, if that makes sense.
No, I can picture the graph, because honestly, you can actually picture the graph in terms of like the S&P 500 or something like that, right? If you look at that for 100 years, it's up and to the right. But if you zoom in, there are down periods, there are big downs, big ups. And
yes.
And so it's directionally accurate. I like that.
Yeah. So that's how I was thinking at first. It's just kind of like a straight line. I'm going to do everything right. Got my saving, max out everything. Every year is going to be like that, but it's not. It's just going to be, I realized that every year is going to be different. You're not going to save like 60% every year. It's not going to work that way. Sometimes it's going to be 20%, it's going to be 30 or 50. So just got to do the best that you can.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And the saying that I like, which is maybe more appropriate, obviously, in this situation, is life is lumpy, right? Like it's not a straight line. We use that under the guise of like expenses is, okay, my annual expenses, let's say, are $40,000 or $48,000, just to make it easy, right? So that would be $4,000 a month, but it's not a straight line. Just like you said, it's not a straight line on the graph. It's not a straight line in terms of expenses, because one month it'll be $2,500 and another month it'll be $6,000. And that's just the way it works, because you have car repairs or you have whatever. And I think we all need to understand that there's no straight line here. And that's to be expected in every aspect of this, from our investing, as we've heard from Brian Feraldi so many times and JL Collins, to this in terms of our expenses, or just the ups and downs of life. And I think we need to all just be okay with that, because we know it's baked in. It is part of our experience.
Yeah, definitely. I have some question on the megawatt. Right now, like, the stock market is going down, but you've been buying in low. Right now it's in the work account where I put in. So I haven't rolled over the money to Vanguard yet, to the IRA.
Okay.
So I don't know if I should roll it right now when the stock market go down. You don't get taxes on that. But if once the stock market go back up, you will get taxes on that if you roll over to your Roth IRA. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, okay, it'll be hard to do the precise details of your exact thing. And mega backdoor is fairly complicated for people. We can certainly link to some really great articles. I'm looking at one from NerdWallet right now that basically talks about like how these mega backdoor Roth work. And basically, like, your 401k plan needs to allow two things, which are after-tax contributions and then in-service distributions. So this actually enables you to save really up to like the total limit, which is, I think it's like $61,000 or something like that in 2022. That's the total 401k limit. So now that includes your contributions as well, your regular 401k contributions. So again, there's a lot of detail here, and I don't want anybody to take like what we're saying right now as gospel on the mega backdoor. There's a ton of detail and you need to get it right. So you actually, if you're listening to this and you're wondering, does my company allow this? You have to go to your HR and see if they allow after-tax contributions and then have in-service distributions as well. So obviously, Vivian, that's a sidebar, but your question, I'm not sure. Are you talking about timing in terms of like that couple day period from when you are rolling it to the new place and it might be in cash as opposed to in funds, or is it something else?
I'm talking more, I think it's more in timing. Like, is it a good time to take money out and roll over to a new account when everything is, the stock market is going down, or should I wait until the stock market going up to roll over, which means that you have more money to roll over to the Roth?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear you. So I guess my first really high level thought is in terms of there is no way to know what the stock market's going to do next week, next month, next year. And I think that's one thing that we try to do here is not time the market, because it's so hard. There are essentially rounding to zero people on earth that can time the stock market properly or prognosticate as to it's going to go up next month, so I'm going to do this. So I think I've learned the hard way in my own life that is just an impossible task. So I don't even try to do it. But I guess in more detail, are you talking about like, okay, I lost money on paper or I gained money on paper? Is that?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at. Because right now the stock market going down. So I'm just thinking, should I just wait until the stock market going up so I can just roll over to my Roth IRA? Or just do it right now and buy as much unit as it can when it roll over to the Roth.
So, right. I think what you're saying
is... I don't know if that makes sense.
No. And just to be clear, right. Like, I guess the perfect world scenario is, okay, I have, let's just say hypothetically, like I have 1,000 shares of the S&P 500 index fund in my 401k now. Mm-hmm. And then I, in all likelihood, you have to sell those. And then when you do the in-service distribution, you then would have whatever the dollar figure that you sold was, right? And then you would just rebuy those same 1,000 shares or whatever it was of the S&P 500. And then you would be in no worse shape. So assuming the stock market did nothing over that short little time period that it took to transfer your money to wherever you were ultimately sending it to, let's assume the stock market didn't go up or down in that day, 2 days, 5 days, whatever it may be. Well, you're in the same spot you were, right? Because you have those same number of units. So I think like from my perspective, that little timing difference doesn't matter that much. And again, like where you could get in trouble is not trouble, but just kind of like mentally is, okay, I've done this in-service distribution and now I have this dollar figure sitting in my new account and I'm going to try to time that. I think that's the hard part is like, because you can then sit there and then you become kind of like an active investor again of, oh, I'm going to wait until the market goes up and then I'm going to buy, I'm going to invest 5% of this money and then I'm going to wait until it goes down and then I'm going to invest 10 more, you know, like you can make up all these rules. But if you really think about it, you had that money invested. You had 100% of that money invested in your after-tax contribution segment of your 401k at your job. It was invested, right? And then what I would say is like, just keep mentally of, okay, I'm just going to invest this money again because this is where I was 3 days before. And then you're not overthinking it. Does that make some kind of sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. You know, it just got me thinking either way, I'll be okay. So I was thinking.
Well, you will be okay, but that doesn't minimize the question. And it doesn't mean like it's a bad question. I think you also were curious, and we talked about this offline a little bit, was almost like locking in losses that like, oh, I invested $10,000, but it's only worth $8,000 now. And I'm selling it and then rolling it over. And I have $8,000 sitting. And that was part of your concern as well, right?
Yes, that was my concern. So that's why I was thinking, should I just wait till next year to do that in service, you know, roll over to an IRA or if the stock market go back up, or just do it right now?
No, it's a great question. Again, I think it's similar to my prior answer, which is we can't look over a short period of time at how has this performed. So sure, that 10,000 might have went down to 8,000. But you have those number of units or shares or whatever it may be of that mutual fund of, let's say, you're, again, large cap or S&P 500, whatever it may be in your 401k. And then you're buying substantially similar or an identical thing for the same number of units. So you're the same, like when we think about what we're buying when we buy a mutual fund is you're buying a little ownership share of these companies. And sure, the price today might be worth less on paper than when you bought it, but you still have that ownership share of those companies. And I understand on some level that it feels like you're locking in a loss when you actually sell it. And I think that's what you're saying is like, oh, I'm actually selling this thing. But because you're turning around and just rebuying, you're rebuying once you do that in-service distribution, that exact same thing, you're in the same spot that you were. You are the same level of owner of those companies. So, I mean, to me, I would just think about it like that. I have this money invested and I'm reinvesting it the day that it comes back, because otherwise then your brain gets too involved. We try to overthink it and we all screw it up when we try to overthink our investing.
Yeah, definitely.
And Vivian, I'm glad you have these specific questions because this is what the Households of FI was supposed to be all about. And this is, we're here to support you. We're here as a community, as me individually, all of the experts that we have in our community. And there might be somebody who listens to the last 5 minutes of this podcast who says, Brad, you got it all wrong, right? Like Vivian should think about it like this. That's great. That's perfectly fine. That's the beauty of, like you said, I'm not alone, right? We're not alone here. There are so many people that are going through exactly what you're going through, that have questions, that have just gone through it, just like your sister just went through this custody battle and she's able to help you with some details and you're able to help her. There's undoubtedly someone who has went through this recently in terms of their 401k who might have a firsthand story, and they can reach out to me at feedback@chooseafi.com and let me know. I can forward you the email. We can have you back on. We can talk about it. And I think that's the beautiful thing of what we're trying to do here is we're trying to follow your story, the good and the bad, We're trying to help you as much as we can and be here to celebrate your wins and to talk through everything and to really be a support and to also provide that motivation for the community that, like you said, you are not alone. And undoubtedly, someone else is hearing your story and saying, I'm not alone. Vivian's going through this and I'm not alone anymore. And that is, you cannot discount how important that is. It's truly, truly amazing. So first, I want to thank you. I know that it wasn't a slam dunk to come back on. So thank you so very much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And I guess let me know, you know, now or via email, like, what can we do to help you? Like, where are you going? Are there people that we could get you in touch with that maybe offline or recording another episode, like you spoke with Tay from the Financial Tortoise? Like, we want to be here. So I don't want to put you on the spot, obviously, but just think about this. And that will be the next episode that we record with you, whether that's a month from now, 3 months, 6 months, whenever you want to come back on, we're here for you, basically.
Okay. Well, Brad, I really appreciate that you bring me back on. And, you know, talking to you does open my eyes of all the positive that I have accomplished, because sometimes you don't know until you talk to somebody, because you're so into your head that you don't know until you talk to somebody and they point out the good thing and the thing that needs to be fixed. So I really appreciate that you did that. It was really helpful for me. It let me see the light and then motivate me more to do better and to continue on this journey and this path. So with asking for help, the number one thing that I need most is accountability. So especially after talking to you, I feel more motivated and want to do more. So this is actually a good accountability for me to be on the show and knowing that I'm motivating myself, but other people is listening to the show. I'm also helping motivate somebody else too.
That's wonderful. That's amazing. Well, thank you again. And yeah, you and I will talk offline and, you know, we as a community are here for you. So again, Vivian, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.